This TEDx Manhattan coverage has been made possible by the Glenwood Institute. For more information, visit glenwood.org. This is part three of a special feature on Heritage Radio Network in conjunction with TEDx Manhattan. In the spirit of ideas worth spreading, TED has created a program called TEDx. TEDx is a program of local, self-organized events that bring people together to share a TED-like experience. The TEDx Manhattan event is called Changing the Way We Eat, and will be broadcast live as a webcast all day on February 16th. The event will be led by food and farming industry experts, including Anna LePay, Chef Ann Cooper, Peter Hoffman, and many more. In this program, Aaron Fairbanks chats with Steve Wing, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of North Carolina, about factory farming in this country and some of the problems that come along with the practices.
All right, we are on the line with Steve Wing of the University of North Carolina, looking to chat a little bit more about his upcoming TEDx Manhattan talk this coming February 16th here in New York City. So, Steve, you're talking about the community health impacts of factory farms, and I'm curious, how did you come to a decision to focus your talk on these issues?
About 10 or 15 years ago, I was contacted by people who live next to factory farms about the impacts of the pollution from those farms on their health and their quality of life. And I've been studying them ever since then.
I'm curious, when you say factory farms, can you define a little bit what we're talking about?
In particular, we're talking about industrial animal production. So these are so-called farms, they're really factories, in which animals are kept in large confinement buildings. They're not on the ground or on a pasture. And this is a practice here in North Carolina primarily with poultry and hogs. And the animals are fed. They live their whole lives in these buildings. The buildings are ventilated so that they discharge the gases that accumulate from the decomposition of the waste, as well as particles from the feed and feces and dander from the animals. And the wastes are flushed from the buildings into giant open pits, fecal waste pits that the industry refers to as lagoons. And from there, the wastes are sprayed out on local fields. And so people are impacted by the air pollutants and then also by the water pollutants that occur from these practices.
Now, one of the things I'm hoping we can unpack a little bit in our conversation today is, you know, the ability for farms to behave in this manner, the kind of movement towards this type of production didn't, you know, emerge overnight. You know, there's been, I think, a focus on increasing efficiencies and consolidation. And the practice in particular of spraying on local fields, as I understand it, is relatively, you know, regulated, where there are set amounts and there's a series of record keeping that has to happen with regards to volume and distance sprayed and weather that day to, you know, prevent some of these impacts that you're talking about. So are we looking here at a failure of a regulatory system, or how is it that this thing seems to have gotten so out of whack for your community, the communities you're looking at in North Carolina?
Well, you're right that these practices have developed over quite some time. And they vary across the country. Here in North Carolina, most of the hog operations are regulated by the state, Department of Environment and Natural Resources. Poultry operations, the vast majority of them, have no requirement to hold any kind of a permit. But in the case of the hog operations, there are reporting requirements, and there are expectations that the growers follow certain rules about the amount supplied and the number of animals on the site and so on. However, the regulatory agency is really unable to provide any kind of regular inspection of the practices themselves. So essentially, like most environmental pollution, the information that the government agencies have is self-report. So this is true whether it's a chemical industry or a waste facility or an animal factory. And to give you some idea about what self-report means for a regulatory situation, you might think about what it would be like if the Highway Patrol were interested in finding speeders, but they didn't have the staff or equipment to actually monitor speed on the highway. And they asked people to report to them if they sped. And it would be a similar kind of situation. So essentially, the information held by the regulatory agencies about whether polluters follow the rules is supplied by the polluters.
So to give a sense of scale, and you know, if we focus for a second on the hog operations, you know, ready fed to market hog is going to be somewhere, it's going to dress out somewhere in the range of 200 pounds. And if we think of a community of people, you know, who are all in the 200-pound range, I think it's really obvious that there's a need for a sewage system or a way to kind of manage this waste. And that's not the case when you're looking at these types of operations. So can you describe a little bit more the kind of idea or science or understanding behind the lagoon system, and how is that kind of supposed to work, and where is it failing?
So you're right. You can think of the animal factories by comparing them to cities. So a facility with 10,000 hogs that are actually producing more waste than humans might have a similar amount of waste to a city of 50,000 people that would be required to have a sewage treatment plant. It's not required for a hog operation. The waste is pumped into an open pit where it does undergo some bacterial decomposition. And that's one of the ways the gas, toxic gases are formed. And so the amounts of waste are truly staggering. We have over 2,000 of these types of hog factories in North Carolina, and they're concentrated in the eastern part of the state. So the neighborhoods where these factories are located is where the impact occurs, the health impact and the impact on people. And what's one of the things that's important to recognize here and in North Carolina, as in some other places, is these kinds of facilities are not put into wealthy communities. People who have access to lawyers or political clout don't have to live with this sort of thing. These are primarily low-income communities of color, and they're people who have less resources to ameliorate the impact, the negative impacts of being exposed to these pollutants because of their living situations, lack of access to medical services, and lack of ability to escape when the pollutants get bad. So it actually magnifies the human health impacts, and it means that people who eat industrial meat, which has a low price at the market or in the store, they're eating something that's subsidized based on the suffering of the people who live in the rural communities that host these facilities.
Can you talk more specifically about what these health impacts look like and how you're able to measure and assess them?
Yes. So we've done several studies. We've compared symptoms of people who live or go to school near these facilities to people who live or go to school further away. And we've seen excess reports of respiratory symptoms and wheezing symptoms and doctor-diagnosed asthma among school children. More recently, we did a study where we set up air pollution monitors in 16 different neighborhoods that are near these hog factories. And what we observed there was that as the pollutant levels rose, according to the measurements on our pollution monitors, the reports of respiratory symptoms increased, people's mental health suffered, their ability to use their property, basically their quality of life, suffered, and also they, for some of the measures, their lung function declined and their blood pressure increased. So these are examples of the problems that occur for people and that correlate with the measured levels of pollutants in their neighborhoods.
Now, I'm curious, you are an associate professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and within your department, the work you're doing, how has it been received by your colleagues, and what do you kind of foresee next steps in this research taking looking like?
Well, my research has been received for the most part pretty well by my colleagues. I can't say quite the same for the industry. They're not very happy with the research that we've been doing. So unfortunately, they haven't really cooperated with us, which would be helpful in terms of getting better information about the pollutants. As far as the future, unfortunately, I'm afraid we may have to continue these sorts of studies because as yet, we haven't seen positive signs from the regulatory agencies that they will take action to reduce the pollution levels and the suffering of the people who are being affected.
Now, you've in past work have looked at these kind of environmental injustice issues and community health impacts. Is there a particular, you know, movement or issue that you look to and aspire to in this area? I mean, with regards to making change in the way people are being impacted on a day-to-day level, is there another movement or area that gives you hope?
Well, actually, there are several things that give me hope. I think it's great that there are people who are pushing for an alternative and sustainable system of food production, including livestock production. And I do think that's possible, and I think it's important. However, I also know that choosing to eat food that's produced in a safer way, in a healthier way, is not going to change the system, because very few people in our country, and certainly worldwide, and this is a worldwide production system, very few people are able to afford the expense of food that's produced in a more sustainable way. And that's because the unsustainable production system, the factory farm system, is so highly subsidized by being able to avoid paying for the environmental and health costs that it incurs. So the movement that's really important is the movement for a change in our agriculture system, one that will promote sustainable, more local food, animals grown on pasture without antibiotics, and with less pollution, and with keeping profits in rural communities. These are the sorts of things that are being promoted by some groups in this country and in other countries that are working for real changes in our agriculture system that will return control of agriculture to rural communities, reduce pollutants, promote a healthier farming system.
I'm curious, Steve, in the communities where you're doing work, is there a recognition that there's a correlation between these farms and the health impacts? That's kind of one question I'm curious about. And also, when people are going to the grocery store and shopping to feed their families, do you get a sense that they're making a connection between the purchases that they're able to make in their local supermarkets and the production models that they're living in the midst of?
Well, on the first question, I think people who live near these animal factories often understand, they usually understand that they are impacted by the pollutants. Some of them are unable to use their wells. Some of them find that the streams where they used to fish are too polluted to catch fish and eat fish anymore. And of course, they are aware of the air pollution because they can't hang out their laundry. In some cases, their children are mocked at school because they smell like hog waste. These are real impacts that can be devastating for the neighbors. So they're aware of it. Unfortunately, many of them are not in a situation where there's anything they can do about it because the industry has such strong control over local and state politics, and people are often actually fearful that they could experience some kind of retribution if they speak out. As far as the shoppers, I think for the most part, people are not really aware of the consequences of food production when they are buying things at the store. So they're looking for a good deal, I think, for the most part, and they're not aware that the food that they buy may reflect real injustice in its production. For the neighbors, as we've been talking about, but often cases for workers, farm workers and slaughterhouse workers and others.
Steve, thank you so much for shining a light on some of these important issues, and we look forward to learning more about your work when we tune in to the TEDx webcast, which will be happening here in the city on February 16th. So if you can't get tickets or be here in person, definitely tune into the live webcast, and we'll continue following up with the lineup of great speakers. Want to thank Steve for being on today, and wish you continued success and luck in your work. Please stay tuned for more from the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you so much.
You can find all of our coverage on the HRN Events and Specials page at heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening.